Oh, I know it's childish and silly.
Yes, it is.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With Us, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 2, Over Dick's Dead Body. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hello.
Hello, listeners. Quick announcement. Again with this, our podcast for our Patreon supporters is dropping episode 87 on March 11th. Let's watch Daphne Zuniga in Law & Order SVU Season 5, Episode 8, Abomination. Mm. Will it be as much of an abomination as the previous Again with this episode? Who can say? Probably not. This is early SVU where they sort of still had it under control. That episode is on Hulu. We will link it in the show notes. And we hope that you will join us for that and all of the other dozens and dozens of Again with this episodes. We have a good time.
Yes. Patreon.com/againwiththis to get all of that. And now all of this, starting with our C plot, Allison's moving out of the complex in Tarobang. Allison calls Jake first thing in the morning for some PG-rated dirty talk. He is coming right up, casually checking the courtyard first to make sure no one sees him, but Allison then sees him get waylaid by Matt, who is still emptying out Joe's old place and helping Taylor move in. We will get to Taylor in the A plot. Eventually, Allison comes down and reminds Jake that she was going to drive him to work again. Since when is shooters not walking distance? But it also proves a convenient cover story when they run into Billy on their way out. And when we see these two again 500 scenes later, they're at the Century Plaza Hotel, a place that Dave and I once stayed. In the lobby, we saw Bob Novak. Remember him? He subsequently has died. We lost him. We do not miss him. I hope Jake is paying for this joint since Allison works for tips, but he's idly admiring the view when she comes out of the can in a filmy robe and black underwear and says this, clip two.
Living so close for so long, searching for a soulmate. And he's right downstairs. I want you to know that you are making me feel things I never thought I'd feel.
So Billy couldn't get you there, huh? Got it. Doesn't mean you're his soulmate. It like you just are having orgasms. Try to keep emotions out of it.
Yeah. It's been 3 days. Like pump the brakes on the soulmate talk, perhaps. Anyway, sex ensues. And at Shooters later, a speedy Matt is on the phone arguing with someone who's returning Allison's call about an apartment. He is saying Allison already has a great apartment, and when Allison yanks the receiver away to say she does still want to look at this place, Jake appears. Matt starts babbling to Allison about why she shouldn't move out. She's the complex's den mother. They've started this in this episode just to have a reason for people to be upset about her moving. Like, you can just say you'll miss having her as a neighbor. Like,
yeah,
this is really overblown. She tells Matt to shut up because she doesn't want this getting out. And then Jake calls her away, which is when we learn this is also the first that Jake has heard about her plans to move. She tells him this is the perfect short-term solution since the place is month to month and it's just a few blocks away. And clip three.
And a couple of months down the road, when the idea of our relationship is out and accepted, I'll move back into the building.
What?
Just keep sneaking around. It's not that hard.
Yes. You
also,
don't.
How well are people tipping at Shooters that you can just go, like, be moving around? Like, that's not how big city real estate is going to work for someone in the tip economy. Sorry.
No. And, like, no one who has ever moved has been like, I'll just move. Like, no, it's a big hassle.
Yeah.
It sucks. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Jake reminds Allison that the whole point of their hiding their relationship was to protect Billy's feelings, and moving apartments for that reason is way over the top. He's not wrong, but
no, he's not.
She says this is for both of them so they can be together whenever they want. He would rather just tell Billy right now, but she says the fallout will be that their relationship won't be about them anymore. It'll be about Billy. It already is. If you're talking about moving, all we ever see you talk about is him.
Yeah.
And, you know, the orgasm she wasn't having with him, which is still about him, but she wins the argument by kissing. And then she's packing when Billy walks in to annoy us all, clip four.
I couldn't believe it when I heard. You're really moving.
Just a couple blocks. It's no huge deal.
Are you kidding? You are this place. Without you, there's no building.
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
Al, I gotta know if this has anything to do with me. You know, I know I've been bothering you and pressuring you. Ridiculous marriage proposal.
It's not about you. I just need a change. It'll be good for me. And you.
So I make you that uncomfortable.
I didn't say that. Uh-huh.
Got those boxes you needed.
Thanks.
So, Jake, talk some sense into this woman.
Trust me, man, I tried. She's determined.
Why do I suddenly get the feeling I'm in the middle of a conspiracy here?
Got me.
Me too.
Okay. I won't push. Any help with the move, I'm here for you.
Thank you. I'll keep that in mind.
Would not trust Billy to clean, would not trust him to pack. I just don't think this is within his skill set at all.
Yeah. Also, he's giving you an opening to tell him what's going on. Take it and deal with the consequences, which are that he hates you, which is awesome.
Yes.
Do it.
Yes. Then he would stop being in your face all the time.
Yeah.
But that's not what occurs, sadly. Billy leaves. And when he is barely out the door, Jake loudly asks Allison if she thinks he suspects.
Thank you. What the fuck? Like, now he does.
Yeah. Anyway, she doesn't think that he suspects anything. Jake agrees that the place won't be the same without her, but it's okay if she moves back eventually. She notes that he could always move in with her. And I know I just said it. They can't hear me. It's certainly been less than a week, so this talk is wild.
Even for a soap, this is lunacy.
It is. And then the Jake we always knew before was all, don't tie me down, I'm a lone wolf, etc. But now nothing would make him happier than living with Allison. And also, it's worth noting, his hair looks better, so there's that at least.
It really does.
Moving on to our B-plot, undead Richard continues to be a problem, as does Matt's habit. We open this plot with Samantha barging in at Sydney's to tell her not how cute she looks in her sundress and cardigan. She can see in the visual aids and agree that I'm right. But rather how crazy Jane has been acting lately. Sydney says all the stuff that was bothering Jane has been cleared up. So Samantha has to tell Sydney about Jane screaming in her room the previous night and vacuuming for 2 hours that morning. That's not how you clean up dirt. Like a pile of dirt.
But also, if it was on the fitted sheet, just fold it into the fitted sheet, put the fitted sheet in the garbage and get a new fitted sheet. Do we have to do everything?
Get a new fitted sheet and a new mattress, because probably some of it got through. Also, there's a locksmith there changing the locks. Sydney says she'll look into it, but she looks worried. And downstairs, the locksmith gives Jane the new key, confirms that Samantha has the only other copy. Enter Sydney. Jane tells her the two large garbage bags by the door are full of dirt from her bed. Sydney acts unconcerned, but Jane tells her it proves she's not imagining things and that Richard was in her apartment. He's not dead, and he's looking for revenge. But Sydney thinks the dirt piler is someone who saw them that night, which is also not great news, if true. But Jane challenges her to prove it, so Sydney says they'll just go back to the grave and dig Richard up. Sure. Cut to the hospital, where Matt is showing up late and unprepared for rounds for the second time that week. He races to his locker and shakes out his last pill, but it falls on the floor under the lockers, and a nurse catches him groping around for it. Yikes. And then we're in the woods. They only brought one shovel. The one, I assume, that was in the doorway. As we know, the grave is empty, and Jane starts panicking, but Sydney notices and retrieves a note in the hole. Clip five.
Looking for something? I've got the body, girls. For $50,000, I'll keep your secret. Someone did see us that night, Jane. It's not a ghost. We're not cracking up.
No. We're just being blackmailed.
Cut to Chris!
Well, the score is enjoying it, if no one else.
It is.
The next morning, it is Sydney's turn to descend upon Samantha, the latter saying that James seems better. Jane joins them, and after she's gotten rid of Samantha, clip six.
Picked a great time to adopt a new sister, Jane. It is what's going on with old Pixie Face, isn't it? Younger sister you always wished you had, but you still ended up with me.
Sydney, we don't have time for this. Where did you find this?
Tucked into my morning paper.
Bring the 50,000 to 2113 East 1st Street at 10 p.m. There's a back entrance. Leave the money next to the door. I know that address. That's right near the garment district. They close up tight by 6.
Time out. I'm out of hurry. Where in the world are we going to get that kind of money?
Who says we need money?
Well, isn't that a prerequisite to blackmail?
No. Not if we bring this along.
No.
Again.
Jane. No, we cannot, under any circumstances, get involved in any more foul play. Jane, if someone were to get hurt, it would be our second strike in a three-strike state.
I don't care. I can't take this anymore, living in fear this way.
I know, but we can't keep adding to the body count.
Fine. You dummy up the money and find something to put it in. I'll be in charge of no one getting hurt. No slip-ups tonight, Sydney. One way or another, we're ending this.
Meaning you're going to freeze again and Sydney's going to have to kill whoever it is.
Like, yes.
Also, show, decide on a tone for this subplot and stick it.
Yeah.
It's like a big serious problem or like Benny Hill music. Like, come on.
Yeah. And like, you know, the idea that Jane would convince Sydney of anything after all she's done in this whole thing is fuck up is absurd. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
give me a break. But she goes along with it. Matt lets himself in at the medical office the next day looking for Michael, but finding the place empty and a note from Sydney that she's down the hall making copies. And then, of course, helps himself to Michael's prescription pad, which is just hanging out on his desk. And Matt is rushing out again when he runs into Sydney, who slapsticks all her copies into the air. And he is so paranoid about getting the pad back that it takes him a while to note that she's taken up counterfeiting. That's what she was photocopying.
Badly, might I add. Like, those are orange.
Yeah.
Spills. What are you doing?
Mm. Anyone who watched Good Girls knows how hard it is to make fake bills. You can't do it on a Xerox machine. I mean, I know it's just for the weight, but the weight's not going to be right either. But
correct.
Sydney laughs that it's for a game she invented. And since Matt's got his own shit, he doesn't bother questioning this. And that night, Sydney's in an all-new Prowler outfit to drop her bag of fake cash by the indicated door. She finds Jane.
These are even shinier. These are like vinyl.
Yeah, it's true.
And Jane has a beret, like, oh my fucking God. I mean, I get that it's a nighttime soap, but really?
Mm. So she finds Jane crouching next to a dumpster, also all in black. Then they slapstick into each other. It's a lot of that in this episode. And yelp, and Jane fumbles with the gun. And I guess I'm starting to see why Sydney took the bullets out before, because Jane seriously is so close to shooting Sydney's face off. But yeah. They watch someone go pick up the bag, and then Sydney's like, so now we follow him. But Jane is already running out into the alley screaming with her gun drawn. And the person stops and drops the bag, and it's Samantha. Clip 7.
Jane? Sydney? What are you guys doing here?
Us? What the heck are you doing here?
Is that a real gun?
Yeah.
Yeah, we never leave home without it. It's a bad neighborhood, don't you know?
Well, really, Jane, if you were going to come down here and pick this stuff up, you should have told me. The guy on the phone, he said that he was trying to get hold of you all day and that I should come down and pick up the samples.
He who? Did he leave his name?
Did you recognize his voice?
No, he just said that he was from Lise Clothing and...
He's testing us.
Cards are on the table now.
I wish someone would tell me what's going on here.
It's nothing for you to worry about. It's just a crooked buyer we've been dealing with. Just got a little out of hand. Right, Sid?
Mm-hmm.
So, the thing is, if Richard is doing this to try to implicate Samantha, to make Jane think that she might be in on whatever this is, it would have made more sense if Jane had known that Richard was also deploying Claire last season to seduce mm-hmm. Jake. But
yeah.
Jane doesn't know that. Like, she doesn't know that Richard was behind that.
Yeah.
So then this just seems like a necessary complication and or to, you know, the audience, I guess, doesn't know what Samantha's whole deal is other than she's from Maryland, which is very important.
Well, and I don't know. Like, it's one thing if the guy, the crooked buyer, quote unquote, said, told Samantha that he was trying to get hold of Jane all day, but presumably Samantha could have gotten hold of her and said,
right,
this guy keeps calling. What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
This is a stupid plan from every possible angle.
It is. Anyway, as they all leave together, the camera pans up to a fire escape from which Richard watches smugly. And the next morning, Jane serves Samantha a fancy breakfast and enthuses over Samantha's doodle. Samantha vaguely says she'll put her art degree to use someday. Jane offers to help if she can. And Samantha's like, cool, but the crooked buyer story is not credible. And you had a real ass gun pointed at me last night. Jane says she's going to do Samantha the favor of not telling her anything about it for Samantha's own protection. And Samantha seems like she's content to drop it for some reason, which, again, also just casts more suspicion on her, in my opinion.
Yeah, agree.
So then Sydney shows up to talk to Jane alone, which, of course, means right on the other side of the window that Samantha's sitting next to. Now Sydney's the one who's nervous and panicky. Jane is as calm as she says. They're just going to wait out the blackmailer, and she doesn't want to argue about it. Clip 8.
Understood. Lunatics always do make the best leaders. Mussolini, Hitler, Amanda.
Fine. It's a little funny.
It was.
So that night, Sydney's hanging around the store after close, confirming that there's been no further communication from the blackmailer. So, right on cue, a couple of couriers wheel in a man-sized wooden crate. Sydney notes that it looks like a coffin, but Jane just scoffs at her and gets to work opening this mysterious delivery she was not expecting, which turns out not to contain a coffin, just a life-size dummy in Richard's blood-stained suit, and another note telling them to bring the money to the grave the following night or the body goes to the cops. Jane doesn't know what to do. But she's evidently had some time to think about it, because the next day she asks Samantha if she could run the store if Jane had to go away for a while. Sydney's behind them at the rap desk answering phones. Like, where does Sydney work at the moment? Did she only go to the medical office to make copies? I guess she doesn't need to be there if neither doctor is, but still.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, to this point, Samantha asks whether Sydney wouldn't be a more fitting candidate to take over in Jane's absence, but Jane says Sydney may be going away too. Sydney hears the end of this and yanks Jane to the fits to ask where they might be going. And in this open hallway, separated from Samantha by a curtain, Jane says, prison. She has written a confession. Even if they had the money to pay the blackmailer, which they don't, it wouldn't guarantee that the extortion would not continue. And Sydney tears up the confession, saying she can get $20,000. She's saved her 10% from the medical practice. She's just going to have to pay that shit back as soon as anyone looks at the books.
Yeah.
But okay. And mm-hmm. She says she also has the money that she made investing in that porn movie, which is brand new news to Jane, but not something Sydney wants to discuss at the moment. And if Jane puts up the store as collateral, Sydney thinks her bank would loan them the remaining $30,000. I am not so sure, but Jane wants to nickel and dime about the interest rate. Sydney sputters that this is to save their lives. And on a shift that night, Matt is blinking at a chart, his eye watering, when his attendant comes around the corner, hating his guts and telling him he failed his last test. Clip 9.
What? I was up all night studying for this test. I don't understand.
I look for brief, specific answers, not endless rambling. Yeah, even doctor. If you didn't know the answers, it was impossible for me to find it.
Doctor, what? You got a problem with me, don't you? I mean, it's either this or it's that, but you're looking for a reason to fail me.
That's ridiculous.
Maybe it's my lifestyle that you don't like. Huh? It's because I'm gay, isn't it?
Gay? I had no idea
you
were gay.
I'm warning you, doctor. You know what? Don't mess with me, because I took care of that homophobe Hobbs and I will take care of you.
Wow. Yeah. And the face on this actor playing his attending is like, fuck.
Yes, she's very good.
Decaf, bish.
Cut to the grave, where Jane is carrying every dime she's ever had to the hole in the ground and crabbing that she never wants to hear about this or Richard ever again. Well, that's going to have to start later. Clip 10.
Richard? I knew it. You're alive.
I mean, I would clock her for how dumb that sounds, but that's like, I don't know, if confronted by the zombie who raped me, who I thought I killed, I'd probably be like, oh, fucking this guy.
Yeah.
And say something just as dumb, so.
Fair enough.
Still.
Things get increasingly tense from there. Clip 11.
Toss the money over here. The money that you embezzled from me. Go, ladies. Start digging. I'm a lot deeper this time. We're gonna need plenty of room for the both of you.
Oh my god. Sax guitar.
Yeah.
I know this isn't usually your lane, but settle down.
And credit to Richard for bringing two shovels, which these two idiots never did.
Although, I always wonder what the logic is. Like, what if, like, you're captive, who you're like, whatever, they made her dig her own grave and then shot, like, what if you're just like, I'm not spending my last moments on Earth doing physical labor. Just
right.
Shoot me now.
Yeah.
Because that's what I do. I'd be like, I'm not getting blisters. No.
Well, we'll have to find out what they do decide to do in the next episode, because that's it for our B-plot. And our A-plot, Amanda tries to undo Kimberly's amnesia, and here comes Kyle. We resume where we left off with Amanda and Peter. She's telling him he was exonerated in his first wife, Beth's, death, but he knows what he did. He killed her. She was so sick, the doctors just sent her home to die, and she kept begging him to help her do that, so he did. And we see some flashback, like in gray slow motion of her, but we don't actually see any, you know, footage of him doing anything. So who
right.
knows?
Smart.
Amanda says Peter must have loved Beth very much, and he doesn't respond. So the next thing we see is Amanda storming up to the detective in the hall and yelling at him about this whole Beth ruse. And he doesn't care and delights in telling her he doesn't even need her testimony anymore, since Kimberly, Peter's only hope, has disappeared from the hospital. Speaking of whom, Kimberly's walking along the side of the road in her hospital gown and a trench coat when Michael pulls up behind her. He asks her to come back and give her statement, but she can't remember anything. And he just says she's safe now and he won't let anything happen to her, as opposed to, don't worry about it. There's a photo of you at the restaurant on the night in question, which everyone seems to have forgotten about since they didn't take or buy it from the photographer at the time.
Mm-hmm. Hey, new writers, go read the show Bible. Thanks.
Yeah. The next day, Amanda gets some news back in the courtyard from a chemically compromised Matt. Clip 12.
Hey, Amanda. I want you to meet Taylor, your newest tenant, Taylor McBride.
Matt, you can't go around renting apartments. There's applications and leases.
Look, Amanda, Taylor's very cool. I know she'll fit right in.
As for the lease, I've already signed it. I'm sorry if we're springing this on you. I know your husband, Peter Burns, is in some sort of legal trouble.
Well, obviously, in his zeal, Matt forgot one important rule that we require of our tenants.
Oh, and what is that?
That they mind their own business.
Oh, Amanda.
Also, since when?
Yeah.
This place runs on gossip. Everyone knows it.
Mm-hmm. And boning each other. Just saying.
So then Amanda is raging into the beach house looking for Kimberly. Michael is also motivated to get this testimony on the record for the sake of the practice, but still tries to keep Amanda away from Kimberly for the moment, explaining about Kimberly's memory loss. It doesn't work. Amanda shoves past him and bursts into the bedroom calling Kimberly a crazy bitch, which is rude, but, you know, kind of accurate.
I mean, not totally unjustified.
I mean, you know.
Freezing, but yeah.
Yeah. Kimberly whimpers that she needs time, and Amanda stomps out again, ordering Michael to make Kimberly remember. And over at the Bellage Hotel, which we have not seen in a while, Taylor lets herself into her room, and as she reaches for the lamp, a male voice says, "Don't," and they make it seem like she's freaked out as he steps out of the shadows and puts his arm around her, but she knows it's her good old husband Kyle and cracks up. He wanted to surprise her. Also, he's becoming suspicious of her whole needing space story. So she says he caught her. She wants to open the location of their restaurant in L.A. She felt a need to be more spontaneous for him and their marriage. And the city's so romantic, which,
oh, my God, that line was so weird.
Yeah. I mean, compared to Boston, the weather's better. I don't know. He notes that this is the most time they've spent apart since they got married. It's been a day, but he'll consider it. And at the jail that night, there's no lawyer anywhere, but Amanda's just hanging out in a meeting room talking strat with Peter. Spouses are routinely permitted to do with incarcerated people. No. Amanda's strategy is to bombard Kimberly with as many details about the night of Bobby's death as possible to jog her memory. And Peter remembers what they ate and that it was mostly small talk until right before Kimberly confessed about her disorder and then took off. And then he tries to take the conversation with Amanda in a more romantic direction. But when she's like, they don't allow conjugal visits, he can tell there's something else on her mind. And she asks if Beth was the love of his life. Clip 13.
When you talked about her death, I felt your passion.
I was different then. Okay. I was naive. I was a kid. And she was my wife, and I loved her. So much so that after she died, I'd convinced myself that I could never love another woman as deeply. Even the words, I love you, were impossible for me to say.
You still didn't answer my question.
You know the answer.
No, I don't. I know how you felt about her.
Amanda, don't you see? You taught me how to feel again. Of love. My feelings for Beth, or anyone in my past, don't touch the depth of my love for you. What?
I can't believe I made you say all that.
No. Thank God you did. I love you, Amanda. Like no one else.
I mean, okay, he tried to kill her, but it's like these two actors falling in love with each other in front of us, and it's fucking cute. I'm sorry.
No, it is, totally. So when she said at the start of the clip, when she's like, when you talked about Beth, I felt your passion. I'm so used to that being from sitcoms. I'm like, no, I felt it on my leg, you know?
Yeah, I know. That's what I had in my notes. So it's like, let's dig it into my leg. Also, no one cares what you're doing in there. Y'all should be fucking repeatedly.
Yes.
Like, yes, have this DTR, how much did you love me compared to your dead wife talk, I guess. But then bone, come on.
Yeah. Elsewhere, Kyle and Taylor are out for dinner, the former savagely critiquing his salad. Taylor agrees that the place is a false front hiding inadequacy, but it is for sale. Kyle thinks it's crazy for them to abandon their lives in Boston. Clip 14.
I can't help but wonder if this has something to do with...
We agreed never to talk about that.
I'm just looking for some sort of explanation.
Well, maybe you're right. Maybe what happened does have something to do with this.
Baby, I told you again and again, I love you.
I need a new start, Kyle. And I think you do too. Now, if it makes you feel any better, we could put a time limit on it. Say a year. Meanwhile, the Boston restaurant, Andre can run it.
So, what are we gonna call this new restaurant of ours?
Kyle's, of course. After its world-renowned chef.
Mm. And his beautifully intoxicating wife.
Okay, first of all, I would never eat at a place called Kyle's.
No.
Try our roofie wings. No.
Yeah.
Second of all, this will be in the visual aids, but you get a pretty decent, I wasn't able to get a great screenshot, but you get a pretty decent shot of, quote, Taylor's engagement and wedding band setting. It's not... like, it's still not my taste, but it's massive, and it's way better. It's, like, so much better than the fugazi, like, gimcracks they usually get that that has to be Mrs. Hamlin's actual set.
Oh, you think so?
It's
maybe.
Like three. It looked like 3 carats. It's huge. And nicer. I mean, it's a little like late 90s.
Sure.
Not my thing, but.
Mm-hmm. So everything is on the up and up, except whoops, then Taylor claims she's going to start looking for an apartment the next day because secret.
Mm-hmm.
And remember in the B plot how Matt stole that prescription pad off Michael's desk? Now he's trying to fill a speed prescription for what seems to be a deeply suspicious pharmacist, but then the guy just checks that generic is okay and goes to fill it and it's fine. The next day, Taylor leads Kyle into the apartment she has already rented, lying to him about everything to do with it, basically. Fortunately, he likes it and wants to break it in immediately, if you know what I mean, with sex. So she needs to go put in her diaphragm.
Oh, my girl.
But what she actually needs to do in the bathroom is look at the bust and Sentinel story about Peter again. And that night, Amanda calls Peter in jail. I don't think the phones work that way.
I don't think they do either.
But okay. She's at the beach house and reports that Kimberly's being very cooperative. Peter will be out as soon as she tells a story. Amanda's trying to keep it light, but even though their last scene was literally lovey-dovey, now all of a sudden, Peter's frustrated and pissed and taking it all out on Amanda. And when he starts yelling, the guard tells him to hang up. And Peter snaps back, and it becomes a very uneven power struggle that only further worries Amanda. But when Peter does hang up, he tries to attack the guard. But obviously, there's another one around the corner who runs in and slams Peter against the wall, and they both cuff him. What was the purpose of any of this, Peter? What did you hope to accomplish?
Or the writers needed to give him a, like, blood clot on his brain, maybe? I don't know what's going to happen. So we'll see.
The next morning, Amanda's heading out in her white pants, and I'm going to guess the most invisible thong ever devised by science. You can see that in the visual aids, or rather not see it, because wow. But she opens the door to Taylor, first and last, plus security deposit in hand. Taylor does not wait to be invited in and walks into Amanda's apartment, gasping about how much she loves it. And Amanda stays at the door as a physical hint for Taylor to leave. But when Taylor jokingly asks why her apartment doesn't have the great features that Amanda's does, Amanda curtly says it's probably because Taylor doesn't own the building and also get out. They walk out together, but then Taylor says she forgot her purse, and Amanda very uncharacteristically just hands Taylor her keys to go get it and tells her to make it quick, but Taylor does not, gazing at a framed photo of Peter on the mantle and listening as the detective leaves a message about the accident at the jail the previous night. Which is also when Amanda comes back in. Peter is in the infirmary. Amanda should get there right away, which she should. This jail has very spa-like conditions. But Taylor starts apologizing. Amanda's obviously more concerned about Peter. She calls the detective while Taylor just stands there gawping for so long that Amanda has to order her to get out. And then Kyle is waiting downstairs, so Taylor has to put on a cheery face and keep up her cover story with him. Amanda said they can move in right away. And Amanda is improbably admitted to the infirmary and told what happened, which is actually even the truth. Peter's lawyers initiated an inquiry that will take a couple of days, but for now, can Kimberly talk to the cops yet or what? Amanda says she will and asks for a moment alone with Peter. He says he's beginning to see he's not getting out. They've taken everything from him. If he doesn't get out, he'll kill someone. And Amanda tells him he can't talk that way, but that's where we leave it. Will Peter kill someone else? Done. Let's name our episode MVP. Tempted to say that thong because it really is something.
I mean, it really is. And the butt that it was not on was also something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm going to say Doug Savant. Because at least this very dumb speed plot line is giving him something different to do.
Yeah. And he's doing pretty well. Like, we've seen the beats before, but he's doing pretty well at it. I'm going to say Locklear-Wagner scenes together, in which it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, they're so cute.
They're like adorable. That.
Least valuable player. Oh, Billy, I know I made him MVP for mean reasons last week, but he's just too much. He's really. Yeah.
And so dumb. And Jane, for that reason, I know I said it last week, and I should not be making her the LVP when she's being basically blackmailed by her zombie attacker.
Yeah.
But at least he has a plan.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Next time on Again With This, Zombie Dick gets aired out, Kimberly gets her memory back just in time, Samantha gets a bad feeling, and a bunch of people get busted. Make sure you bust into that roll of Tums before you dig into the visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. Those are on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, which is available in all formats. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, and damn it, don't just walk away from us. There's oodles of extra 90210 and Melrose content on our Patreon page, including our monthly digests of the nearly indigestible 90210 OMG podcast, just for our subscribers at the $5 level and up. And you'll find all of that at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm funniest money, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is completely intoxicating wife, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is seductive swimsuit, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.